friends, when something profane comes into the camp, you need to deal with it. Which is another lesson for us. Alright, anyone else in this brief section of Leviticus 10? Anyone at home? Anyone here? Larry?
You know, it's a situation where he just doesn't want people to deal with this issue. He wants to deal with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As our God, we're equipped, and he's equipped us through his word to deal with issues like this.
Yeah. How did Jesus say that in Matthew 18? Whatever you bind on earth shall have been bound in heaven already. All we're doing is catching up to what God's already determined. If we are judging things appropriately, which again goes back to the wisdom of having older men who are supposed to be wise and intelligent, knowledgeable, to be elders and leaders, to discern between good and evil, to lead the people in what is right. All right, anyone else? All right, let's move on to the third section, which in back in Leviticus chapter 10, which is God or Moses? I've forgotten. Somebody telling the priests, Moses spoke to Aaron, reminding them that they are to eat their portions of the offerings. Let's just read it, verses 12 through 15, because this sets up the last section. Someone please read that. Again, someone at home, just quickly unmute and just start reading. Otherwise, someone here will start doing it.
Then Moses spoke to Aaron and to his surviving sons, Eleazar and Ithamar, that the grain offering that is left over for the Lord's offerings by fire, and eat it unleavened beside the altar, for it is most holy. You shall eat it, moreover, in a holy place, because it is your due and your sons' due, out of the Lord's offering by fire. For thus I have been commanded. The breast of the wave offering, however, and the thigh of the offering, you may eat in a clean place, you and your sons and your daughters with you. For they have been given as your due and your sons' due out of the sacrifices of the peace offerings of the sons of Israel. The thigh offered by lifting up and the breast offered by waving, they shall bring along with the offerings by fire of the portions of fat to present as a wave offering before the Lord. So it shall be a thing perpetually due you and your sons with you, just as the Lord has commanded.
This is essentially Moses reiterating to Eleazar and Ithamar, I know this bad stuff has happened, but you've got work to do. You need to get back to work, take the food that's been given to you, and go and eat it. And this is essentially him reminding them, this stuff that was given to you in chapter 9, and this is really in chapters, in the end of chapter 8 and in chapter 9, all the offerings that were given, the priests, were to get a portion of those, and he's telling them, take your portions and go eat, which sets up verses 16 through 20. I don't want to get into all the details of this section, because those are really studies we're going to start getting into next Sunday, and for about 4, maybe 6 weeks, we're going to be studying the sacrifices and the priests. So we'll get into all the details of this then. The important thing now is that in chapter 9, they were told, go present, make these offerings, take your portions, and go and eat them as you were commanded. So now, let's skip to the last section. Let's see, that's 9. Let's go to chapter 10, verses 16 through 20. So someone, please read that.
But Moses searched carefully for the goat of the same offering. And behold, it had been burned up. So he was angry with Aaron's surviving sons, Eleazar and Ithamar, saying, why should you not eat the sin offering at the holy place? For it is most holy, and he gave it to you to bear away the guilt of the congregation, to make atonement for them before the Lord. Behold, since his blood had not been brought inside into the sanctuary, you should certainly have eaten it in the sanctuary, just as I commanded. But Aaron spoke to Moses, "Behold, this very day they presented their sin offering and their burnt offerings before the Lord. When things like these happened to me, if I had eaten a sin offering today, would it have been good in the sight of the Lord?" When Moses heard that, it seemed good in his sight.
All right, now this part we want to dig a little deeper into why Moses had a problem with this. Let's go to chapter 6 of Leviticus, and let's read verses 24 through 30.
And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to Aaron and to his sons, saying, this is the law of the sin offering. In the place where the burnt offering is killed, the sin offering shall be killed before the Lord. It is most holy. The priest who offers it for sin shall eat it. In a holy place it shall be eaten in the court of the tabernacle of meeting. Everyone who touches its flesh must be holy. And when its blood is sprinkled on any garment, you shall wash that on which it was sprinkled in a holy place. But the earthen vessel in which it is boiled shall be broken. And if it is boiled in a bronze pot, it shall be both scoured and rinsed in water. All the males among the priests may eat it. It is most holy. But no sin offering from which any of the blood is brought into the tabernacle of meeting to make atonement in the holy place shall be eaten. It shall be burned in the fire."
Verse 30 is kind of the key to what's happening in chapter 10, verse 16 through 20. No sin offering of which any of the blood is brought into the tent of meeting to make atonement in the holy place shall be eaten. Earlier in the section, it talks about how, in verse 25, "Speak to the sons of Aaron, this is the law of the sin offering. In the place where the burnt offering is slain, the sin offering shall be slain. It is most holy. The priest who offers it for sin shall eat it." Verse 27, "Anyone who touches the flesh shall become consecrated. Any of its blood splashes on a garment in a holy place, you shall wash what was splashed on it." Sin offerings, the blood wasn't always taken into the tabernacle. It wasn't always. But if it's not, no, if it is, no sin offering of which any blood is brought into an offering, you shall eat. Moses is saying, why didn't you eat this food of the sin offering? It wasn't taken in the holy place. You should have eaten it. Why didn't you? And now you brought guilt upon us. That's basically what the problem here is in a nutshell. On top of chapter 9, let's read verses 1 through 7. The specific sin offering is the real problem here. Chapter 9, verses 1 through 7.
"Now it came about on the eighth day that Moses called Aaron and his sons and the elders of Israel. And he said to Aaron, 'Take for yourself a calf, a bull for a sin offering, and a ram for a burnt offering, both without defect, and offer them before the Lord. Then to the sons of Israel you shall speak, saying, take a male goat for a sin offering, and a calf and a lamb, both 1 year old without defect for a burnt offering, and an ox and a ram for a peace offering to sacrifice before the Lord, and a grain offering mixed with oil, for today the Lord will appear to you.' So they took what Moses had commanded to the front of the tent of meeting, and the whole congregation came near and stood before the Lord. Moses said, 'This is the thing which the Lord has commanded you to do, that the glory of the Lord may appear to you.' Moses then said to Aaron, 'Come near to the altar and offer your sin offering and your burnt offering, that you may make atonement for yourself and for the people. Then make the offering for the people, that you may make atonement for them, just as the Lord has commanded.'"
And then read verse 15, please.
"Then he presented the people's offering and took the goat of the sin offering, which was for the people, and slaughtered it and offered it for the sin, just like the first."
There were many offerings that they were to present this first big ceremony, celebration. And at the end of all this, the glory of the Lord appeared to them. One of those offerings was the sin offering. It was the first one mentioned, and it was the first one that they took care of. Part of the sin offering, and we won't go do this today, but if you want to learn more about this, well, we may look at part of it later, but the intent of the sin offering is in chapter 4. In chapter 6, 24 to 30, we saw that the priests would take part of it and go eat it. But But Eleazar and Ithamar did not go take their portion and go eat it, like they were supposed to. Why didn't they eat it?
Set the example.
They were supposed to set an example and do what the Lord said, right?
He made it clear as could be.
Yeah.
Didn't know if it would be accepted properly.
Okay, they didn't know if it would be accepted properly. Or did they know it wouldn't be accepted properly? And how'd you come to that conclusion? What's your idea there?
Just notice that if their heart wasn't quite right from still having some grief.
If their hearts aren't right from having some grief for their brothers. Mm-hmm. Okay. And where'd you get that idea? We've already talked about it, that a lot of what's going on, you know, they were basically told, don't go grieve for your brother. And what does Aaron say after Moses comes down on Eleazar and Ithamar?
He indicates that things like this have already happened.
Say again?
He indicates that, he says something like, these things have happened to me, like he's had some sorrow in the past.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what that sorrow is, because he had four sons and only two of them just passed, so I don't know what he's referring to.
When people have bad attitudes.
That's it, yeah.
Regardless of, if they can't worship in spirit and truth, is God necessarily accepting of that worship? What does Isaiah 1 talk about? Don't bring me your offerings. Why? Weren't the offerings commanded?
It was polluted.
They were polluted. Let's look at Isaiah 1.
You know, it's very easy for us to get in this situation.
It is. Don't jump ahead though, Larry.
Huh?
Don't jump ahead. Isaiah 1, 10 through 15. You're on the right track, Larry.
Thank you.
Just don't jump ahead. Isaiah 1, 10 through 15. Someone, please at home, somebody read.
Hear the word of the Lord, you rulers of Sodom. Give ear to the law of our God, you people of Gomorrah. To what purpose is the multitude of your sacrifices to me, says the Lord? I have had enough of burnt offerings of rams and the fat of fed cattle. I do not delight in the blood of bulls or of lambs or goats. How far did you say?
15.
When you come to appear before me, who has required this from your hand to trample my courts? Bring no more futile sacrifices. Incense is an abomination to me. The new moons, the Sabbaths, and the calling of assemblies. I cannot endure iniquity and the sacred meeting. Your new moons and your appointed feasts my soul hates. They are a trouble to me. I am weary of burying them. I think I said burying. I meant bearing them. When you spread out your hands, I will hide my eyes from you. Even though you make many prayers, I will not hear. Your hands are full of blood.
Why isn't God accepting their worship here?
Well, it was done in disobedience.
Their worship was being done in disobedience, rebellion, sin. Were they offering the sacrifices that God wanted? Yes. But were they really offering the sacrifices God wanted?
No.
No.
They were offering the kind of sacrifices, but not doing it with the right heart.
What does David say in the 51st Psalm? What the true sacrifices of God are?
Broken and contrite spirit.
A broken and contrite spirit.
That's right.
That's what God wants. Now, Eleazar and Ithamar and Aaron just lost their brothers and son. Are their spirits broken and contrite? Yes. In this part of the world, for thousands of years, when someone dies, what is one of the major outward signs of grief.
Lamenting.
What?
Lamenting.
Lamenting, yes.
Tearing your clothes.
Tearing your clothes, sackcloth and ashes, and
shaving
their head. What else?
Mourning for so many days.
Mourning for so many days. What was one of the outward signs of mourning?
Wearing.
Weeping.
Weeping, sackcloth and ashes.
Wear black, maybe.
What?
Wear black.
Well, I don't know about them, but we wear black.
Yeah, black.
What about fasting? What about fasting? Now, I don't know that Eliezer and Ithamar are fasting, but they're not eating the food that they were supposed to eat. The food was given for them. It was burned on the altar instead. And that was something they apparently intentionally did. Because Aaron basically says, things like this happen. Would it be good for them to eat the sacrifices when things like this are going on? Karen?
It still kind of carries over from last year's theme, but I'm thinking that if it's a heart thing and they knew their hearts were not properly motivated to do what Moses just told them to do.
There you go.
There's that. When their brothers were killed instantly, like Ananias and Sapphira as an example, God didn't allow the first two guys, Nadab and Abihu, to do another kind of sacrifice, like for atonement, because, oops, they made a big blunder.
Uh-huh.
Maybe he judged their hearts and knew their intentions when they did it. You know, David prayed for cleansing me and clean heart. When we partake of the Lord's Supper, we're supposed to look inwards and judge ourselves, is my heart right that when I take this, or am I just taking the emblems and I did that duty of taking the Lord's Supper?
Everybody hear all that? Eat and drink in a worthy manner. Eat and drink in a worthy manner. For whatever reason, we can speculate. We do that in the Genesis class all the time, don't we, Genesis class people? Speculate. Why aren't their hearts right before God? What about them right now would be eating and drinking in an unworthy manner? Whatever, there's many different possibilities, and probably several of them are all true. But whatever it is, their hearts were not in a position where they should have been eating and drinking. They knew it, and Aaron knew it, and apparently God knew it. Patty?
They might have wondered if they would have been killed doing the sacrifice inappropriately.
There you go. They could have been concerned for their own lives, which is appropriate, isn't it? The fear of the Lord is the beginning of
knowledge.
And the fear of the Lord has been reinstilled in just about everybody now. The whole congregation, I think, saw Nadab and Abihu be slaughtered the way they were. And the closest people to them would have taken it to heart more than most because, well, man, Nadab was the firstborn. He was next in line to be high priest. Then Abihu. And here we are, the second middle child and the youngest child. If they're going to be struck down like that, we got to be on our extra P's and Q's, the jots and tittles of the law, etc., etc. On top of that, we're grieving. On top of that, we might be, why did God do that still? Maybe not understanding to a point. But whatever it was, they were not eating and drinking in a worthy manner. So back to Leviticus 10. Aaron has to explain that to Moses. Who are Nadab and Abihu to Moses, by the way?
Uncle.
Nephews. He's their uncle. Why isn't he just on board with this? Why is he just instantly condemning Eleazar and Ithamar for it? There's some good reasons and potentially not good reasons.
My first reaction to that is we cannot relate to Moses in any way whatsoever, mainly because Moses was on the mountain and got the Ten Commandments.
Uh-huh.
Moses came down and saw the calf. You know, Moses is part of the Red Sea. Moses is going through a life experience here that is supernatural.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he's learning all of these things about God too, and he sees these things happen, he's being educated along the way at the same time.
Yeah.
So how any of these men are reacting to what God's, because you said it in the very first class, and I thought it was so important. The whole book is about patterns. It's about trying to understand how God thinks about things and how they're learning this process. And through this journey they're going through, we're kind of like the fly on the wall, learning the same thing about God.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sometimes it's hard for me to ever really, not that it's not relatable in terms of you know, how it affects my life, but it's kind of unrelatable in how they're going to react. When God's telling these men who just lost their family, especially Aaron, get over it, move on, and here's why. They're learning this as they go in many ways.
Nadab and Abihu weren't keeping the law. And what's Moses's, like, what's his, one of his primary deals? The lawgiver. They didn't keep the law. Now you're not keeping the law. What's with you guys? Didn't you just see what happened? But there's a different law at work here too that Moses either didn't consider or had not thought of. And Aaron basically reminds them of that law. The heart before God, the broken and contrite spirit, eating and drinking in a worthy manner. There's keeping the law, then there's keeping the law in a worthy manner. Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapter 5.
Before you make that point,
go ahead.
One thing that's often taught about the New Testament as opposed to the Old Testament is the New Testament's about when God starts teaching us about the heart, mm-hmm. about the right condition of the heart. The Old Testament's all about following laws and the commandments of God. Verse 19 of chapter 10 very much tells us that Aaron's effect and Moses' acceptance of Aaron's effect of the heart is what it's always been about.
Yeah.
Even in the Old Testament, it's always about the condition of the heart, even though we often, I think, interpret the distinction between the two, one being about the heart, one being about the law. It's always been about the heart. I think this is an example of it.
The proper heart motivates the proper obedience. Right. Yeah. All right, Matthew 5, 21 through 24. Just 23 and 24. Go ahead, somebody.
Therefore, if you are offering your gifts at the altar and there remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First go and be reconciled to them, and then come and offer your gift. Settle matters quickly.
Well, I'm sorry, I was listening to your translation and got confused. Even something as simple, I'm on my way, I'm at the altar. And they're learn or remember, my brother or sister got something against me. Our first reaction will offer the sacrifice. Get yourself right with God first. No. God accepts the offering based on the rightness of our lives and the rightness of our hearts. First, go make things right with your brother. Have your heart right before God first. Then your offering will be accepted. And this is what we're learning from Eleazar, Ithamar, Aaron, and Moses. Have the heart right first. If your heart is not right, your worship will not be accepted. That's what we learn from Cain. That's what we learn from Nadab and Abihu. It's what we learn in Isaiah and Malachi and Jesus and Paul, etc., etc., etc. David, the sacrifices of God are a broken and contrite spirit or heart. Then there is this. Before I get to that, yes, Zach.
I just say, it's not the coming to the altar part that's the issue. It's when you're coming to the altar and then you're offering your sacrifice knowing that there's something you need to fix. Because mm-hmm. oftentimes it's at the altar that you're making the correction in your heart.
Yeah.
And in our modern form, it's the invitation. You have to be here, or in our current situation, at least on Zoom, to wait for the invitation, to accept the invitation, to make your heart issued known. Now, is that the only time you can make that known? No. But that's the public time, the time where it's set aside specifically for that to happen. Well, you have to be at the altar to make that known. So the issue isn't coming to the altar. It's coming to the altar and ignoring what's in front of you, what the issue is. But you have to come to make it right, and is the point.
Yeah, the balance and the alignment of all those things have to be in the right place. Yeah. Shoot, now I forgot. That's okay. Let's go back to Leviticus 4, just to make this quick point. We talked about in Leviticus 6 the sin offering and the priest's part of the sin offering. And what Moses was freaking out about, you were supposed to eat it, it wasn't taken in, you were supposed to eat it, why did you do this? What we hadn't talked about yet was the reason for the sin offering itself. The sin offering stands alone in its uniqueness in all the other offerings. And it's amazing to me how God spent a great deal of time on the sin offering, and that ends up being a problem at the end of Leviticus 10. Someone read verses 1 through 1 through 3. Of Leviticus 4.
Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the sons of Israel, saying, if the person sins unintentionally in any of the things which the Lord has commanded not to be done, and commits any of them, if the anointed priest sins so as to bring guilt on the people, then let him offer to the Lord a bull without defect as a sin offering for the sin he has committed."
And now verses 13 and 14. Either the same person or somebody else.
"Now if the whole congregation of Israel commits error, and the matter escapes the notice of the assembly, and they commit any of the things which the Lord has commanded not to be done, and they become guilty, when the sin which they have committed becomes known, then the assembly shall offer a bull of the herd for a sin offering, and bring it before the tent of the meeting."
And verses 22 and 23.
"When a leader sins and unintentionally does any one of all the things which the Lord his God has commanded not to be done, and he becomes guilty, if his sin which he has committed is made known to him, he shall bring for his offering a goat, a male without defect."
And 27 and 28.
"Now if any one of the common people sins unintentionally in doing any of the things which the Lord has commanded not to be done, and becomes guilty, if his sin which he has committed is made known to him, then he shall bring for his offering a goat, a female without defect, for his sin which he has committed."
I am not sure of the relevance that the issue in chapter 10 is of the sin offering. But there very well may be. The sin offering was for you do something wrong, but don't realize you've done something wrong. But then you realize you did the something of the wrong. And now you have to, what's the word?
You gotta pay for it, in essence.
Pay for it, or, starts with R?
Repent.
This is an offering of repentance. This is the beginning of it. Well, at least this is your part to God. Because what does repentance really require? Sacrifice?
Change.
Change where?
Heart.
Change of heart, change of mind, change of behavior, change of attitude. And this offering is, in essence, a confession to God of an acknowledgement of that sin. I sinned. Did not realize I sinned. But now I know I sinned. Matthew 5, the passage we read there. If on your way to present the altar, and there learn your brother has something against you. Whether that thing is real or not, this sin offering is regarding sins that you didn't know you did, but then learn you didn't. How long can you go without realizing you did something, you sinned?
Until you're told or learn that you've done wrong.
Until you're told or learn. How long can that be?
A long time.
How many people in the last year learned that they were doing something they should not have been doing and had to change that? Raise your hand.
Quite a few.
Right? This is the offering for us. Now, what about the sins that where we're supposed to be doing something and don't know we should be doing it? Isn't that two sides of the same coin?
Similarities, that's right.
Yeah. So God has always had this idea in mind and built it into this law of Moses. This law of Moses that even the Apostle Paul said was a law of sin and death. God had grace built into the law. What do I do? What do I do? David, I think in the first Psalm, talked about keep me from secret sin.
Psalm 19.
Keep me from secret sin. I've always understood that line to be a reference to the sin offering and unintentional sin.
And presumptuous sin.
Presumptuous sin, yeah.
As well.
Right. And
I had to escape it.
What's the point? Is there a relevance to Leviticus 10, the sin offering, that it's the sin offering is the problem? What do you think? I'm not sure there is, but there may be.
Well, the sin offering dealt also with unintentional sin. And so if it's a situation where the application here is in Aaron's case, he's unintentionally sinning by not eating of the offering because of his heart or anything that has to do with that, then the sin offering would be applicable.
Okay.
I mean, again, that's kind of a stretch, I guess. It's just, you know,
right.
The concept of the sin offering dealt with this issue of unintentional sin.
When Moses learned why Eleazar and Ithamar weren't eating it, did he press them on it?
He was content.
Or was it a matter of grace? That God allowed them to disobey the command in order to keep another command? Or to keep, I don't want to say a more important command, but it kind of is, isn't it? To eat and drink in a worthy manner? Isn't it better not to eat than to eat and drink in a worthy manner? Because he who eats in an unworthy manner does what? What?
Condemns
himself.
Yeah.
So.
Do you believe that's true?
He changed my thing. I guess it's time. What?
You believe that's true, what you just said?
Probably.
Huh? I don't think you believe that.
Sure I do. Okay. That's it. And our class, I didn't get to put my slide up. Dadgummit. We're going to do the next lesson, lesson 4, which is don't be like the nations. One of the most important lessons we can learn from Leviticus. If you don't have the paperwork, there's still some up here. And if you need it at home, it's on the website, or I can bring it to you, so let me know.